You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday, September the 11th. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. And it was in this hour, 6 years ago, that the second plane flew into the World Trade Center, and we all realized that the first plane wasn't some terrible accident, that this was a deliberate act, and it was horrifying. Our guest this hour says that the events of September 11th handed the Bush administration an opportunity to put a plan into motion to invade Iraq and amass power, among other things. A plan that was fueled by propaganda rather than the truth. We talk this hour with Frank Rich. He is a New York Times columnist, and he is the author of The Greatest Story Ever Sold: The Decline and Fall of Truth in Bush's America. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number if you would like to talk with Frank Rich about the ideas in his book or current issues of the day, related to current issues of the day, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. We'll talk some about the testimony yesterday from General David Petraeus. He will be going before two Senate panels today and talk more about his plans to bring up to 30,000 troops home from Iraq by next summer. Petraeus said yesterday that U.S. military goals have in large part been met in Iraq and that the Iraqi military is stepping up. We'll ask our guest this hour if he thinks this is just another chapter in The Greatest Story Ever Sold, or what he makes of the current events in Iraq right now. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And let me welcome him. Frank Rich joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks a lot for being with us. I'm going to give you a really open-ended question starting off on this anniversary of 9/11. What are your thoughts today?
Well, my thoughts are complicated. On one hand, I'm so vividly remember that morning. In fact, I'm sitting in the same room in my home where, when I heard the news before I turned on the TV set from my sister-in-law, who lived a half a block away from Ground Zero, and called to say that she was all right, and just the shock of the whole experience. I'm struck by the resilience of New York City since then, which is remarkable. In some ways, New York has grown stronger, more. I don't know quite to describe it, but it sort of had some effect on New York City that is positive. If anything positive can be said to come out of an event so horrific and tragic, I guess I'm also struck by the disconnect between the war that was begun shortly thereafter against the people who actually did attack America on that morning 6 years ago, and this sort of bastard war that was pulled out of the closet months later, and it goes on and saps American resources in the war against the terrorists who did come after us. So, and here it is, it's like Groundhog's Day in that sense, that we're still having this argument over Iraq and mired there, even as Osama bin Laden prepares another video, as Al-Qaeda regroups in Pakistan and elsewhere, and America seems in some ways to be lost in a fantasy, much as it was before 9/11 when we were all obsessed with Gary Condit and shark attacks that weren't really particularly pronounced in America's beaches.
Yeah, that's right. That whole summer was all sorts of strange news stories and tabloid journalism and the like, and we were really shocked out of it. You say, though, that this the events of 9/11 did give the Bush administration the opportunity to put this plan into motion to invade Iraq, something that Dick Cheney and others wanted to do all along?
Yeah, I feel I don't In the greatest story ever sold, I try to parse this and figure it out from what we know, what went on. What we do know is that, of course, there were a number of neoconservatives within the Bush administration, typified by Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz, for instance, who always wanted to go to war in Iraq if there were a return of the Bush forces from the father, and wanted to do this long before there was 9/11. After 9/11, we know from Bob Woodward's reporting mainly that this idea was taken off the shelf and presented to the president, and that he rejected it initially. It was certainly not an ide fix of George W. Bush at the time he was elected or took office, as it was of these neocons. Something happened at the end of 01 and the beginning of 02. My own theory is that we had won the war against the Taliban, or thought we had at that time. We'd knocked them out in Afghanistan. This was a war that, correctly in my view, drew support of 90% of the American public. It was effective, or seemed so at the time, until we let it slide years later. And there was an election year coming up, a midterm election year, with the Senate and the House in the balance. And we know that beginning in January of 2002, Karl Rove started talking to the Republican National Committee about running on the war, about the war being such a good, and terrorism being such a good political tool for Republicans. We also know now, the public did not know it at the time, that we had lost Osama bin Laden in Tora Bora, probably in December of 2001. So the war on terrorism that originally had been sort of mandated after 9/11 and was a direct response to 9/11 was waning. Polls show that people were losing interest in it. They didn't want an indefinite war on terror, and we'd knocked out the Taliban anyway, so the mission had sort of been accomplished. And it was by the spring and early summer of 2002 that this drumbeat started rolling out about Iraq, reaching its climax, of course, after Labor Day 5 years ago, as Congress came back into session, the midterms started to be nearby, and the Republicans decided to beat the Democrats over a stick as being soft on national security if they didn't vote for this war. And I think the feeling of the Bush administration was it was an easy add-on. It was a way to continue having a war, in a sense, and to do something that's not terrible, knock out a horrific a dictator who'd killed thousands of people. And I think they thought it would be like, you know, when Reagan went into Grenada. They'd be home by Christmas. It would be cheap. It would be easy. No real planning was required. And then, of course, it blew up in their face.
Yeah. And this invasion of Iraq had to be sold by making reference to links between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda.
Yes. There were two main fictional stories. That was one. And the other, of course, was weapons of mass destruction, but a very specific part of weapons of mass destruction. One thing that I feel that has sort of entered the discourse that's completely inaccurate is this line that, well, the Democrats saw the same intelligence we did, the Europeans saw it, everyone thought that Saddam had WMD. And to a certain extent, that's true. But what's false is that the Bush administration picked one particular strand of WMD, the scariest one, and that's nuclear weapons. That's much scarier than sarin gas or anthrax or biological and chemical labs, and there was no evidence whatsoever to support the idea that Saddam was getting nuclear weapons. There was some bad evidence on the other WMD fronts, and that's the one they pushed, and I think that is remains a scandal and a blot in American history, and that's the one that gave us phony uranium from Africa, a smoking gun that might be a mushroom cloud, these cell lines, some of them written by White House speechwriters in 02, parroted over and over again by Cheney, the president, Condoleezza Rice, Rumsfeld, ultimately Colin Powell, to scare the wits out of America about a threat that really did not exist and which they had no evidence to support.
Let's bring this to present day, because we know the mission has not been accomplished yet. General David Petraeus yesterday, talking before the House panels, says he sees the withdrawal of around 30,000 U.S. combat troops from Iraq by next summer. He said that the military objectives have been met in large measure. He rejected criticism that the White House orchestrated yesterday's appearance by saying, "I wrote this testimony myself." You think so?
Well, I'm not going to say that he's lying. He may have written it himself, but if everybody has sort of drunk the same Kool-Aid and is on the same page, it's a distinction without a difference. I feel it was the hearings yesterday were remarkably unenlightening. The Democrats did little, or Republicans for that matter, on the committee did little to penetrate what was seeing a glass that's not even half full, that may be a sixth full, half full kind of rhetoric employed by both Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker. And where are we? It's Groundhog Day. We're back where we started. The troops that they were talking about withdrawing have to be withdrawn anyway. We're running out of troops come April, and this seems to be a plan not for victory in Iraq or even a definition of what victory in Iraq might be. I don't know what it is at this point, as a plan to kick this down the road until there's a new president who's going to have to clean up the mess that's been left behind.
Our guest is Frank Rich, New York Times op-ed columnist. He's written about culture and politics for many publications. He is the author of The Greatest Story Ever Sold, The Decline and Fall of Truth in Bush's America, now out in paperback. And you can talk with Frank Rich by calling 1-800-642-1234 or 263-1890 if you're in Madison. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
In describing the recommendations I have made, I should note again that, like Ambassador Crocker, I believe Iraq's problems will require a long-term effort. There are no easy answers or quick solutions. And although we both believe this effort can succeed, it will take time.
That was General David Petraeus yesterday telling Congress that last winter's troop surge has in large measure met its military objectives and that they should make a significant troop withdrawal possible by next summer. Petraeus will be testifying again today before Senate panels, and tonight after 6 o'clock we'll have a wrap-up of the testimony. During the 6 o'clock hour, a special report from National Public Radio. That's later today. We're talking with Frank Rich. He is the author of the book, The Greatest Story Ever Sold, The Decline and Fall of Truth in Bush's America, which has recently been released in paperback. And to the phones we go. Mike in Milwaukee is with us. First time, Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy, and thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say first off that I was very disappointed in General Petraeus' testimony. He had this reputation as a straight shooter, and yet, you know, he seemed to be very disingenuous and is, you know, intentionally or unintentionally seems to be just another propaganda merchant supporting the Bush position. And I say that for this reason. He was claiming that certain military successes in Iraq are due to the surge and to the U.S. troops in general. When he mentioned Baghdad, I was really shocked that he would say that, you know, what he did, because, you know, that the surge has actually lessened the violence in Baghdad. But, you know, it doesn't take too much research to find out that Baghdad has been essentially ethnically cleansed of Sunnis by the Shiites. So that's why the violence is down. There aren't as many Sunnis for the Shiites to kill, and there aren't as many Sunnis left who could kill Shiites. He also claimed that the successes in Anbar was due to the U.S. military. But that's patently false. The Anbar successes came about because al-Qaeda overplayed their hand there. They started killing Sunnis who weren't as radical as al-Qaeda would have liked them to be. So the Sunnis turned against al-Qaeda, not because of the U.S. military, but because, al-Qaeda had just overplayed its hand.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. That's right, Frank Rich?
Yes, I don't disagree with a single thing he said. And, you know, as the Times put it this morning about what happened in Anbar province, which had nothing whatsoever to do with the surge, in fact, which the president noted as a success and claimed as a success in his January speech announcing the surge. It predated the surge, and how did the Times put it in an editorial this morning? Something like, you know, it's like a rock falling down, a stone, you know, falling down and claiming credit for gravity. It's disingenuous is the best you can say about that kind of spin that we got yesterday, sad to say, from this distinguished general.
Yeah. Well, what do you think we're going to see, if anything, from the Democrats in terms of trying to force some sort of faster troop withdrawal?
Well, I hope that we're going to see some sophisticated legislation that forces the hand here of the Republicans. The key issue politically in Washington is for the Republicans. They have to run on this war, and they have to recognize that they can't just sit on their hands and let American troops die for no purpose indefinitely and think that the public is going to reward them. And the Democrats are going to have to ratchet up the pressure. I'm also hoping, perhaps in vain, but that the Senate Democrats who are going to be conducting the testimony today for Petraeus and Crocker will, if you will, draw some blood on some of the issues that are outstanding here, including those just mentioned by your caller.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mike. Beth in Oregon is with us now. Hi, Beth. You're on the air.
Hi. I really like your writing, Mr. Rich. It's
Thank
a
you.
Array of clear thinking.
Thank you.
Do you agree, or do you feel as I do, that while there's plenty of blame to go around for the mess we're in, that particular scorn should be reserved for Colin Powell, who I think of all the folks in that administration knew better, but for whatever reason kept his mouth shut. Until he reminds me a lot of Bob McNamara, to be honest with you. What's your opinion?
Well, I do feel that Colin Powell is a tragedy and a disappointment. And of course, ever since he left the Bush administration, he has been inching away from what he did. He's called to the presentation of the United Nations, for instance, a blot in his record. He's had various assistants speak up in the press and complain bitterly about what went on in the Bush administration in the run-up to the war. And he has also apparently granted an interview to the magazine GQ that's just out now, talking more about his regrets, as I understand, about what happened. It is a disappointment. Is he the worst culprit in this? Probably not, because he may be the most shameful in the sense that he really knew better and decided to toe the line and did in a way that did not really serve the country. On the other hand, he's not responsible for some of the worst decisions, for whipping up the war in the first place, or for even telling some of the worst lies, erroneous as his UN presentation was. But I think now he owes it to the country to give a full accounting, not to do the sort of striptease through surrogates, through little interviews here and there. He owes it to, I think, to all of us to say why he did what he did. I would hope to apologize for it and to tell us what information he knows that may be useful as we try to move forward and out of this fiasco.
Next we go to Rick in Gays Mills. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning. It's stimulating to talk to Frank Rich. I can't wait to get to his column in the Sunday New York Times. The thoughts are so stimulating.
Thank you.
The reason I'm calling is the following. I can remember the day that this thing happened 6 years ago and watching it and gulping and saying to myself, oh my God, everything's changed. I'm not sure that we've come to grips with the whole thing. If someone burned down your garage, you'd probably be mad for a very, very long time. And I think that the folks in the States have not worked through the anger and perhaps the implications of our own behavior of how we might have gotten to this fix. And since all of that is somewhere under the rug yet and simmering, isn't that perhaps a dangerous emotional issue within the culture that we haven't worked through that could be used by various politicians one way or the other.
I'm not sure if I quite understand the question. Could you just...
Well, the fact that was such a major event, I think even more of an impact, say, than Pearl Harbor in 41,
right,
that made people angry, and yet people haven't dealt with that anger. There's been no national discussion of it. I think the response to it has been one of outrage and sort of flailing about rather than focusing anger, perhaps focusing activity more, as the British have called it, the police action, rather than just waging all-out war.
Well, I think you're right, and I think that one thing that happened is, as we were still in this sort of shock and grief, the subject was changed to this war that did not have to do with 9/11, and it muddied the waters in a way that continues to this day. And so it's as if, you know, this horrific blow was administered to the United States. We were still wounded, and then suddenly we were carted off to Never Never Land in the form of a war that had nothing to do with the events of 9/11. And so it's all sort of stuck there in the psychological sense, unresolved, undealt with. Many of the underlying issues that fuel the venom of Al Qaeda have not been addressed. You know, we still have Karen Hughes is our main public diplomacy effort out in the Middle East. And so I think you're right. And I think it's just another tragic way that the Iraq war has distracted us from the real war against jihadist terrorism and from the real issues that pertain to that and that were illuminated in the horrors briefly on September 11th, 2001.
Yeah, and you talk in the book about how public opinion polls and the such showed that we wanted to go after Osama bin Laden, and we approved of Afghanistan, going into Afghanistan, but we're much, much more hesitant about going into Iraq until apparently we heard from the administration so many times about WMDs and this link to Al-Qaeda that it eventually convinced people that Iraq was a threat.
Right. Well, that's one of the narrative I try to show in my book. This was this was not some improvisation. This was a very conscientious plan formed in the summer of 2002 by WIG, the so-called White House Iraq group that we didn't know about at the time, Karl Rove, Mary Madeline, Scooter Libby, Andy Card, delegated to sell this thing as a product. And it was very, very cleverly done. This was also, of course, the time we would later learn that there was the so-called Downing Street memo written by the head of British intelligence informing the Blair government that the White House was determined to fix the facts around the policy. So it was a very concerted thing, and we were taken for suckers. And it was so effective that, as we know, by the time we went to war in Iraq, not quite a majority, but almost a majority of Americans believed that the 9/11 hijackers were Iraqis, when in fact, of course, none of them were.
Yeah. Mike in McFarland, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. You know, I guess what frustrates me about your guest is I've read many of his writings on this subject, and he's, you know, what bothers me is he's a cheerleader for the defeat of the United States. He's a liberal, he's a partisan. And I understand he dislikes George Bush and the Republicans, but to use a war while troops are dying, spilling blood, fighting for the success of our country, you know, he constantly, I mean, he's one of these gentlemen, he already has attacked the integrity of this general. He has no proof that the general has done anything inappropriate, but yet, because this is all part of, we can't let George Bush have any good news, we can't find out that the American troops are having some success on the ground, he uses anything he can.
Let me give you a follow up. But you know, I want to get Frank Rich in on this. Are you cheerleading for the defeat of the United States?
No, I feel sorry for this guy. He seems to be completely unaware that Al Qaeda has completely regrouped. That all these years later, we have not taken out Osama bin Laden. He is not living in a cave somewhere. He is helping to run with Zawahiri, who the American intelligence sources, not me, they say is more powerful than ever, a emboldened, bigger network whose major targets include the United States. I am cheerleading for our victory in that war, and every day we get bogged down and have our brave troops bogged down trying to giving their lives to try to reconstruct a country that is in a civil war is another day that we are losing the war that was declared on us by Osama bin Laden 6 years today. So, you know, if you think the war in Iraq is a great thing, fine. Let's hear from you if there is another attack, as there have been in Europe in recent years. If there was a cell just uncovered last week in Germany that was Al-Qaeda based and harbored by an American enemy, Pakistan. Why are we not in war? If we care about getting rid of these terrorists, why are we sitting idly by while Al-Qaeda regroups in Pakistan and elsewhere? So it has nothing to do with my opinions about George Bush. I actually care more about the country than I care about George Bush or his opponents in the other party. And this idea that you've besmirched called cheerleaders, people who care about the safety and the national security of the country, is just it's sad. And I think the people who supported this war and believe that the American Armed Forces should have been broken by it and be stranded there while we have other real threats, including from Iran, are the ones who should be answering the question about who actually is patriotic and these other shibboleths that are just thrown out to stop a serious argument about America's best interests.
Mike?
Well, the facts are facts. It's the anniversary of September 11th, and we haven't been attacked in 6 years in the United States. Of course, that's because Al-Qaeda's regrouped. I get that. You're going to continue with your partisan line. And then I really enjoy when liberals like yourself, Mr. Rich, now you want to go into war with Pakistan. Now you want to attack Pakistan. Oh, Iraq is the wrong war. We should be attacking Pakistan. That's what I enjoy about this debate, is that, frankly, we see the reality of what liberal politics in this country has become. Oh, we're in the wrong war? That's a new spin. I have not heard the Democrats, other than Barack Obama, suggest we're in the wrong war. I severely doubt that if Mr. Rich and his and the people he supports in the Democratic Party were in control of the White House, that they would be preparing to wage war against Pakistan.
Mike,
you haven't
heard Democrats suggest that the war in Iraq is not the right war?
In fact, what we've heard is they've said it's the wrong war, but they are not willing to go fight anywhere else. You hear the rhetoric, but the point is we haven't been attacked in 6 years. Mr. Rich can't deny that. Yeah. And the fact is, when we catch these people, he suggests it's because of our failure. They caught these people in Germany because the world has united against terrorism. I find it humorous that every time a cell is caught, that somehow is a failure of U.S. policy. That is despicable to make statements like that.
Well, you want to...
it's putting words in my mouth. Obviously, a number of Democrats, and I don't speak for the Democratic Party, but Democrats who do speak for the Democratic Party have spoken vociferously, and indeed Obama is an example, about the fact that we have to do something about these training camps in Pakistan. We can't have this Munich-like situation where we just look the other way because we're enthralled to a dictator, a General Musharraf. We have also been very cautious about dealing with Saudi Arabia, which I guess this listener doesn't know, it actually provided most of the people who did attack us on 9/11. And so, you know, anyway, I have my own views. I don't speak for liberals. I don't speak for Democrats. All sorts of words are put in my mouth. I'm very glad that we haven't been attacked since 9/11. I hope we'll continue not to be attacked. Almost every intelligence expert who spoke up this week on the anniversary, including people from our own government, and including the National Intelligence Estimate of our own intelligence agencies, say the threat is very real. But, you know, he doesn't have to worry about anything. We're in Iraq, and we're going to have a government that can defend itself in Iraq, and that will solve our problems. And we'll have American troops put that together for us over the next 5 years.
We are talking with Frank Rich. He is the author of The Greatest Story Ever Sold, The Decline and Fall of Truth in Bush's America, now out in paperback. Frank Rich is also a New York Times columnist. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock on this 6th anniversary of 9/11. Kathleen will talk with the author of The Looming Tower about Al-Qaeda and its future in Iraq. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking with Frank Rich. He is author of the book, now out in paperback, The Greatest Story Ever Sold, The Decline and Fall of Truth in Bush's America. In the book, among other things, he shows how the White House used the events of 9/11 to put into motion a plan to accomplish a variety of ends, including invading Iraq and amassing power. We welcome your thoughts and questions for Frank Rich, and our next caller is Linda in Argyle. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you, and thank you, Mr. Rich, for your writing. I appreciate it and enjoy it.
Thank you.
I have a couple of concerns. I was at Fighting Bob Fest this last weekend. One of the speakers is a fellow named Jeremy Scahill, who wrote a book, Blackwater.
I know of the book. I haven't read it, but
sure.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I haven't finished. I'm about a third of the way through it. And one of my concerns is that it may not matter a lot how many few thousand troops are withdrawn from Iraq in the next few months, because there are actually probably as many mercenaries in Iraq now as there are U.S. soldiers.
Well, so, right.
Replace.
Yeah,
all
right. So you
warm bodies with more expensive warm bodies, so to speak.
So you just want? Do you have a question about that?
It's just a concern that I have about that.
Yeah.
That,
are you concerned about that, Frank Rich?
Yes, it's sort of one of the undercovered aspects of this war. According to a story in the Los Angeles Times a couple of months ago, there are actually more contractors than there are troops, than there are American troops. There are more American contractors. We don't really know what goes on with them. They're often have tremendous security issues and problems and are not protected even as well as our troops are. And it's become kind of a shadow mercenary army that's not regulated or anything else. So there are all sorts of issues about safety, security, crime, corruption in some cases, bravery we don't hear about in others. And it's simply fallen off the edge of the table. No Americans seem to be get very little information about it. We haven't really heard much about contractors since those four men were tragically strung up in Fallujah at the beginning of the war.
Mm-hmm. And you had another concern, Linda?
Yeah, the other question that I have is what do you think of the likelihood that the Bush administration will decide sometime in the near future to bomb Iran?
I don't have an opinion on that.
Okay.
I know there. I just don't know.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of understandable fear of that. I think it would be devastating for us and for Israel. It would make the bad situation there worse. But I have no reason to believe that it's actually being planned. I just don't know, and I don't want to have an opinion about something I don't know about.
Yeah, thank you, Linda. Do you have an opinion on the White House line that we cannot withdraw anytime soon or quickly from Iraq because whole region will fall into a bloodbath, and Iran will get involved, and it would just be terrible if we would pull out of that region right now.
Well, no one really knows what's going to happen. It's going to be a bloodbath, and is a bloodbath, no matter what happens. Whether it will just lead to a war that will result in a forced partition of the country, we don't know. Whether other players in the region might intervene to try to stabilize Iraq, those friendly to us and those hostile to us, we don't know. What we do know is that many of the people who are predicting the worst catastrophe that will befall us are those who also predicted the whole thing would be a cakewalk going in. So it's very, very hard to know what's going to happen. No, and there's probably no wonderful outcome. One person who's arguing that it won't be bad is that bad, oddly enough, is Ahmed Chalabi, who was the person that, of course, appeared at the State of the Union address with President Bush and was one of the people we wanted to lead the in Iraq. He's now a figure in the government in the de-bathification program of the Iraqi government. Gave an interview to the Wall Street Journal last month saying that he thinks that the possibilities of complete and utter chaos are overstated. But what we also have to remember is it's incredibly bad right now, and it's an enormous humanitarian crisis that we are doing nothing about. Some 2 million Iraqis have fled largely to neighboring countries like Syria. Many of them are living in camps. Another 2 million Iraqis are displaced within Iraq and homeless, fleeing ethnic cleansing. We're doing nothing about it. We don't have the troops or the forces to do anything about it. What we could do is at least let in some of the thousands of Iraqis who have worked for us or our contractors and who are quite likely to be hunted down because they did work with the Americans, but we are letting them in by handfuls, not by the hundreds and thousands needed, even when people like Ryan Crocker have been begging Washington to hurry up the process.
Mm-hmm. Mike in Appleton is our next caller. Hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I certainly hope I have a chance for a second question or a rebuttal. I'd like to pose the following question to your guests, and let's put politics and emotions and rhetoric aside for the moment. I mean, without a doubt, this whole scenario in the region, let's forget about Iraq, in the region is about oil. And any common sense will tell us that we cannot leave the region. What we should probably do is redeploy our troops. Let's get them out of the line of fire. We've done as much as we can for the Iraqis. They have to figure it out themselves. Get them out of the line of fire and put them on the borders with Syria and with Iran to contain especially Iran and let it play out that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a proposal that has some currency in Washington right now among both Democrats and Republicans, and it's one plausible scenario, but it's not as yet being entertained seriously by the White House, to my knowledge.
And your theory in the book is not that the neocons wanted to go into Iraq. You say it wasn't over the oil, it was over power and politics and winning the midterm elections.
Right. Yeah, I don't believe that we went in there to grab the oil. Oil, as the caller says, is, mm-hmm. however, a big part of the mm-hmm. geopolitical picture. And an interesting story this week is that in Kurdistan, the one part of Iraq that's relatively self-contained and stable and sort of partitioned on its own and has been for a long time, they just decided not to wait for the Iraqi government and made their own deal with a major American oil company. My mind is blanking on which one, on their own. And so one of the other problems with the central government is it has been unable to create a law that would administer the oil in a way that actually might benefit the Iraqi people, and also, you know, mm-hmm. to produce it. I mean, it's, you know, they can't produce basic services, and they can't show no signs of being able to run the oil that they have.
Yeah. Mike, you wanted to follow up. I mean, our guest agreed that some in Washington agree with your plan.
Yeah, I have it's a parallel question, but it encompasses the whole, you know, our situation in the world, and that has to do with what's going on in Korea. And I believe it was on one of your shows, Joy, a comment was made that, you know, how wonderful that the Koreans have decided to start disarmament. But, I mean, your guest at that particular time, you know, I really can't believe the comment. I mean,
well, you know, we're not talking with that guest now. So what do you want to ask Frank Rich?
My question for him would be, do you believe that the reason the Koreans have backed off, is because the Chinese just pulled the plug on them.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's an interesting theory, but I don't, again, it's the kind of thing I don't want to speculate about because I don't know. I certainly can't say it as a fact. What, do you feel that's the case?
Well, I think that the last things that the Chinese want is more U.S. involvement there. I mean, you know, they can't stand the fact that we have troops in Korea right now. But, you know, if things were to get worse there, that would mean more of a U.S. presence in that region, and they don't want that, so they pull the plugs on the Koreans. Now, when it's convenient for them, they're going to, you know, they'll flick the switch again.
Well, interesting. You know, right. I just can't verify what's going on in the heart of the Chinese foreign policy in mind at this moment.
All right. Thanks for calling, Mike. Bill in Elm Grove. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Great program. Great guest, Mr. Rich. Why did the mainstream media cave so fast on the rush to war when experts like retired General Anthony Zinni said war in the Middle East should be a last resort? General Zinni said stability in the Middle East should be paramount, and war is the ultimate destabilizer and disastrous.
Well, that is a central question mm-hmm. I deal with in my book. Why did this happen? Why there were many people hiding in plain sight. Certainly, Anthony Zinni is one of them who were before we went into Iraq. Warning of the dangers, and they were, you know, a lot of really smart people, including Mohammed al-Baradei of the UN and Hans Blix of the UN, who warned that the WMD evidence was wrong. There were people like Chuck Hagel, a Republican in the Senate, who voted for the war, but actually gave what 5 years later a speech that holds up that is predicted everything that would go wrong. There was General Shinseki, who testified before Congress that we needed hundreds of thousands of troops to stabilize Iraq. So what was this about? I can't go into what's actually a substantial part of the greatest story ever sold in the time we have, but the press was credulous, opposition in Congress was credulous. Some of it can be attributed to the shock of 9/11, I think that it really, you know, sort of distorted reality at a certain point in the immediate months, where people were very easily kind of led by the nose, and also because Bush had rightly earned this country's most of Americans' trust by the way he prosecuted the war against the Taliban in Afghanistan, and then were blindsided when the whole thing was hijacked and taken on a detour. But there were lots of people warning of the problems. Brent Scowcroft, you know, people in the George Bush the First administration, and so it's kind of a tragedy.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bill, for the call. I remember the media coverage prior to 9/11, and we touched on it earlier in the program about the shark attacks and all that. And then it changed for a while. We started trying to answer that question, why do they hate us, and doing a whole lot more about,
right.
Foreign policy issues and that sort of stuff. And we've kind of gone full circle, haven't we, right now?
We have. We've sort of lost the thread. So much has happened, and we've been so distracted by Iraq. And I think also the American public is so turned off by Iraq at this point that people just don't want to hear about any of it. They're so depressed. Most people just want it all to be over. And so people have just sort of lost sight of the main issues and just, I think, really would rather think about Anna Nicole Smith and Britney Spears and all the girl who was murdered abroad, almost anything but
right.
this horrible, you know, yeah. quagmire we're in.
Yeah, let me go to Tom and Alma. Hi, Tom, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm just wondering if Frank's got an opinion on at what point the manipulation of facts and deception at the onset of the war becomes criminal, and is anybody from this administration ever going to be culpable for those manipulations?
I don't know. I know that people can make the case that there have been stuff done that was criminal, I think it'd be hard to make the case, at least in terms of politicians lying about anything, because it's so built into our fabric and so standard. And I don't know how you adjudicate that in the judicial system. The issue of impeachment, which may be in part what you're also talking about, my own feeling is impeachment is a mistake. I feel that this country, we are in a very precarious situation. We are fighting a war that is draining our resources, that is distracting us from the war against the people who did attack us 6 years ago. And for Congress to now have an impeachment trial and just make that the business of the day, I think is frivolous. Even if people feel that there are justifiable grounds, I just don't know what the point would be in terms of the good of the country. History will determine George W. Bush's fate. He's leaving office anyway in 18 or so months, and we've got real problems that this country has to address, and it's not time to have a circus, however just it may strike some.
Yeah. Well, we have time for one more. Marilyn and Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'll try to make this fast. What is the guest's opinion of the ABC program called The Road to 9/11 or The Path to 9/11?
Yeah, and the fact that it is not going to come out on DVD as I guess the producers of it thought it would.
Well, it should definitely come out on DVD. It was sort of a schlocky show, critical of Clinton, fine. If it's for any reason being held up for political reasons, it came kept out of release because it was critical of Clinton, that's appalling. It should definitely be out there, and people can debate it, and that's what the First Amendment is about. And so if we don't know for a fact that it's being held up for political reasons, but if the creators are right who are saying that, they have a real right to complain, and I think it's a scandal.
We'll leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
It was delightful to be with you. Thanks for having me. Great talking with you and your callers.
Yeah, they are smart, aren't they? Frank Rich, our guest. He is the author of The Greatest Story Ever Sold, The Decline and Fall of Truth in Bush's America, just released in paperback. He is a New York Times op-ed columnist. He has been the paper's chief theater and drama critic for the past a dozen years or so. I'm Joy Cardine. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and Leo Duran for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.